I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Travis Dow, and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. Oh, it feels good to say that. And since our last episode, I have finally, I've gotten a lot of alchemy reading done, because, it's been a while. In any case, there is a new Podcastnik YouTube channel out. There is a new Podcastnik podcast, the Podcastnik show, I guess we're calling it, just based off of the audio feed for the YouTube channel, but also like 10 times more content. And the idea is to shows that I've kind of let neglected a little bit, let's say, like The History of Alchemy, but also ones that were just retiring completely, like Africa history. Also, as a way for me to just be able to talk about any historical topic I want, or any topic I want for that matter, just kind of do whatever we want, we've put those just audio-only podcasts on the Podcastnik feed as well. And this episode is for the YouTube channel. There is a video on the Podcastnik YouTube channel, which is also linked to on podcastnik.com, which is a kind of new introduction to alchemy, which I just really wanted to do a video for this. I gave my first lecture in German on alchemy in, like, in front of a classroom. And just having a visual component just really helps, like just being able to write stuff down or having a map or being able to point to a timeline. So I can do all of that in video. I kind of edited it all together and spent a lot of time and effort on it. So I really would appreciate if you check out the Podcastnik YouTube channel, which again, you can find on podcastnik.com. And there is new content coming. In fact, I've said this forever, but I do have a manuscript of a book almost entirely finished, and I'm just trying to like put the last couple of thoughts together. I've said that for a year now, but it is kind of getting there. And as that comes out, we'll have new episodes on alchemy out as well. I want to talk about specific like chemical reactions and some of the raw materials used in the lab, and then just introduce some more alchemists. And specifically, the book I'm writing is a tour through Prague in the Golden Age, in the time of Rudolf II. I was a tour guide in Prague, and so I thought, what if we had sort of a time machine and I could describe everything that I know that's just right around the turn of the century, right before the Thirty Years' War, or like just years before the defenestration of Prague, even in the same castle, so just a critical time and place, and I'm writing a whole book on that. So yeah, don't unsubscribe. There's more stuff coming. Meanwhile, why don't you check out the Podcastnik show, the Podcastnik podcast, the Podcastnik YouTube channel. All of that stuff is linked to on podcastnik.com, or just follow us on Twitter. There's also a new Podcastnik shop. We have new alchemy merch out right now. It's actually been kind of popular without even me even talking about it on the show, but we have like not just our own new designs for alchemy, but also like just our kind of curated content, stuff that we think is cool ourselves, basically, because we are history nerds. So anyways, here's another, introduction to alchemy. If it seems a little bit dense, that's because there's a visual component on it. So go check out the video if you can. But here it is. People ask me all the time, what is alchemy? You don't get asked that all the time? That's weird. I sure do. And I'll tell you, it's really simple. It's a 1700-year-old field that tries to turn lead into gold. All right, that's it. I mean, they also were after, like, eternal life and creating artificial life, homunculus and the elixir of life. But really, it's the Philosopher's Stone trying to turn lead into gold. Wait. So first you have to think a little bit more like the philosophers of the day, like 500 or 1,000 years ago. It all kind of comes down to Aristotle's four elements: earth, air, fire, water. And then maybe the properties of like air is wet and dry, fire is hot and dry, those kind of properties. By looking at its properties, you can figure out what matter is composed of, which is pretty scientific in a way. Galen and Hippocrates added to this in the field of medicine as the four humors, which is important, but not now. But other people added to the field of alchemy and what matter is composed of, like Abu Bakr Muhammad Ibn Zakariya al-Razi, or in the West just known as Rhazes. He added to the theory by saying what metal is made out of, namely sulfur, mercury, and some salts. Al-Razi also started to classify compounds and minerals, which is really important for later chemistry and science, but not for us right now. So moving on. Now, matter has properties like it's red, or it's light, or it doesn't smell bad, or of course it's wet, cold, dry, whatever. And back in the day, there was a computer where you could calculate what certain matter is made out of. You have air, earth, fire, water, but then there's another dial on the computer for those properties like dry, wet, hot, cold, and so forth. And then, of course, they were all Kabbalists back then, so the dignities of God, like good, greatness, power, mercy, and then around that, the alphabet. And those dials all turn and spin, and then you get your inputs and outputs just like a computer. You figure out what the material is made out of that you were trying to find out. So by knowing that it's light and dry and maybe earth, you also can find out that it's good and merciful and great. So that's matter. And that was the Majorcan Ramon Llull's computer from the 12th century, or whenever he did it. Now, properties might have things like blue and, light and cold and whatever. But what about the stuff they couldn't explain 500 years ago? Like magnetism or gravity or even mold growing out of a stone? The unknown, the unknowable explanations, the unknowable properties are occult properties. The unknown is just occult, and the occult properties also kind of lead to the occult sciences or the hermetic sciences. And the occult sciences are astrology, alchemy, and magic. And they all go together. But we are talking about alchemy here. So we are also talking about the precursor to chemistry and physics and some aspects of medicine, and like pharmacology, and definitely chemistry, if I didn't mention that one. Metallurgy, a ton of scientific discoveries and inventions, artificial dyes, and what does make science science, what makes alchemy important for the history of science, is experimentation. If you think of an alchemist, you probably imagine an alchemist's lab, some guy slaving over a furnace, mixing together some witch's potion sort of deal. That's pretty accurate. But through their experimentation, they got consistent results, they wrote those down, even if in weird code with weirdness and complexities that were unnecessary. It wasn't scientific notation by any means, but the fact that they wrote down their results and they could replicate results and everything, that's kind of science, that's experimentation. Alchemists accidentally invented better distillation methods, control systems like to keep a, like a thermostat to keep a steady temperature over time in a furnace, all kinds of artificial dyes and tanning, and of course glass like inventions and better theories and optics and all sort of things that came from weird alchemist ideas. And they also worked side by side with the smelters and assayers of the mining industry. But the other thing that makes it kind of scientific is empiricism. They had empirical evidence. They had evidence that alchemy was a thing, that metals ripened. They thought lead eventually, or tin or iron or whatever, turned to silver and gold naturally in the earth. The evidence for this by written, like Michael Sendivogius had theories on this, but this is kind of an older theory, that when you do see a mine and you're mining for copper, let's say, you might see traces of silver in that mine. And if you're mining for silver, you might see traces of gold or vice versa. And because of that, they thought maybe, it wasn't kind of metal was on a spectrum and it was kind of, started out in lead and tin and then kind of ripened with the steady heat in the earth. You know that the deeper down in mines you go, it gets hotter and hotter. They had all these ideas of naturally gold is created and can be seeded and can be regrown. And there's this whole idea of, getting to the purest gold. That's actually what the Philosopher's Stone is. It's just gold that's so pure that it makes other metals turn into gold. That's what alchemy is. I guess you can stop listening now or watching. Now, the thing is, all metals are refined. Remember, they're made out of mercury and sulfur? But wait, that can't be, because mercury and sulfur, if you put those together, there you get mercury sulfide. Not any metal, you get cinnabar, which is red, and it's a mineral that the ancient Greeks knew is a substance. So when Al-Razi talks about breaking down metals into its sulfur and mercury components, he's actually then talking about philosophical mercury and philosophical sulfur, which now we're getting into alchemy. And gold, what are the properties of gold? Gold is pliable, gold doesn't bond, it doesn't alloy with other metals, it wants to be pure, it wants to be by itself. It is a noble metal. And those properties were then seen as noble and trying to get other metals to be more like gold. Gold was thought to have healing properties, and potable gold or drinkable gold is one of the many definitions of the elixir of life. Gold is pure. And now we're really starting to talk about how they understood alchemy back in the day. Forget the periodic table, forget the modern atomic theory, conservation of mass, unknown gibberish to the ancient philosophers who followed the Hermetic arts. Hermetic arts? What's that? The occult sciences. Sorry to confuse you. It's the Hermetic sciences, the occult science, magic, astrology, and alchemy. Oh, you don't know who Hermes Trismegistus is? Okay, so let's actually look at alchemy at its beginnings and roots a little bit. Alchemy is, the word itself comes from, why trust me on this? Just go look it up. Alchemia. We get it from French, alchemie. It's kind of the same in Latin. You might see chemia or alchemia or whatever. But in any case, that definitely comes from Arabic, alchemia. And chimia comes from Greek. There's two theories to the theory of where that comes from, and that could be, both could be correct. First of all, it's chimia is like a mixture, which is where modern chemistry comes from. In a chemical process, you're combining two elements or more, whatever, and coming up with a mineral, an alloy, some combination of those, a mineral compound. So you're mixing. The other theory is chem could come from the word black, as in Egypt. So the black Nile soil, which was fertile, was black, so the fertile soil of Egypt versus the yellow desert sand around it. That kind of contrast of, you know, black on a really light color. So chem, it's the mysteries from Egypt. And in fact, now we're getting closer, because Hermes Trismegistus goes way back, certainly to the 4th century AD in Alexandria. That's Ptolemaic Egypt. 4th century Alexandria is a crazy place. We have Gnosticism, like Christians who thought they had secret knowledge that shouldn't be shared with everybody, only the adept, like a secret society. Our first extant actual manuscript from an alchemist is by a man named Zosimos of Panopolis, who himself was probably Jewish and had a bunch of, believe in like Jewish mysticism, not Kabbalah, that comes later, but definitely along those lines than like mainstream Judaism. He was also kind of into Neoplatonism and Hermeticism. Now Neoplatonism, just like in Alexandria, there was these weird cults of Neopythagoreans. Pythagoras was that, you know, geometry dude you had to learn in school. Neo-Pythagoreans were not math nerds. They were like weird. It was definitely a sect or a cult. They had these weird occult practices. And the only thing it had in common with Pythagoras is that they believed in like the golden mean and the universe has mathematical secrets and is written in mathematical languages. But it was definitely more of a religion than a science, for sure. And the Neoplatonists went far beyond the belief of Plato, Aristotle's teacher and the student of Socrates, that Plato, Platonic solids and forms and everything. Well, Neoplatonists designed this whole religion around Platonism, like there's the one and the world spirit and the, you know, under the one. So it's kind of like a monotheistic religion, but the one is so unattainable. There's like these interpreter gods in between and the god of this and that. And I wouldn't quite call it monotheistic. It's like an in-between of monotheism and, you know, just their average Greek beliefs of Zeus and whatnot. But it's definitely its own thing. And it was developed for hundreds of years by the time it comes to Alexandria in the 4th century. So, like, there's Platonists and Middle Platonists and Neoplatonists, and they all just called themselves Platonists. But by the 4th century, they were some kooky dudes, all right? And then there's Hermes Trismegistus. Now, at the time, including early modern period, like 1600s, 1500s, the Golden Age of Alchemy, they thought, Hermes Trismegistus, same as Zosimos in 400 AD, and the Medicis in, you know, 1400, 1450 in the Renaissance. So they, all these people thought that Hermes Trismegistus was this ancient character. We're talking ancient knowledge, like a contemporary of Moses, or maybe like a Chaldean, Babylonian version of a prophet, like Zoroaster, like this kind of ancient knowledge. We're also, you know, where we get astrology from, like astrology comes from Babylonians and Assyrians and Sumerians and Chaldeans and all those. The Magi, the three wise men in the Bible is where we get our word magic from. They were from Medes. So this ancient knowledge was definitely around still in Alexandria, in Ptolemaic Alexandria. Zosimos picked this up. Zosimos is an interesting character because you could call him a Jew, but you could call him many, many other things. Like, he wasn't just a Jew. He was a total mystic, kind of out there, fun guy to learn about. And he does write of Hermes and a couple of alchemists that came before him, like Miriam the prophetess and that kind of thing. So in any case, this was taken serious. Like, you can't just, like, brush off Hermeticism, because now we know, you know, those texts probably come from Egypt or even, but like Isaac Newton translated Hermes' Emerald Tablet. I mean, Isaac Newton was like 100 years after the Golden Age of Alchemy. So in modern science time, I mean, we think Isaac Newton is like, oh, he's the guy with gravity and calculus and, you know, modern mathematician. No, he also translated Hermes Trismegistus. So if we want to think of alchemists the way that they thought, you know, at the time, then we can't discount Hermes Trismegistus. He is like an authority figure like Moses, okay? Anyways, you got Christian Gnostics with their secret knowledge. You got Jewish mysticism, not Kabbalah, but things like Hermes and, you know, other beliefs. So the other two Hermetic arts are magic and astrology, so that kind of comes into it. Hermes Trismegistus, for astronomy, or for why people should care about astronomy, it was, you know, as above, so below. That's the Hermes, that's a Hermes quote. So, you know, as the cosmos and the stars, there's kind of a mirror impact on us. So that's why people that, like, believe in astrology, you know, they read their horoscope. It's like, well, there's something happening up above, but we're in tune to that. We're part of that world spirit. We're part of that, whatever theory you want to go for, whatever religion, you're tuned to that. So the stars do matter. So astronomy was actually developed for better horoscopes, for better astrology, not the other way around. Science progressed so you could tell the future better. Okay, don't get it twisted. It was that way. Hermes Trismegistus, so the same thing, as above, so below. So the macrocosm is a mirror in the microcosm. That's a Hermes thing, where specifically alchemists read that to mean that what happens in mines, what happens naturally in Mother Nature, in the earth, we can also do in lab. Microcosm, macrocosm. If you get a furnace just right for the right amount of time, you get the right natural conditions, basically, you can replicate what happens in nature and turn lead into gold. We now know that's not how metals exist. So by the way, I'm not stupid. I know that metals are individual elements. So lead is one element on the periodic table, gold is another, and outside of like a particle accelerator or inside of a star, you're not going to change lead into gold. It has been done in a particle accelerator, but not the way alchemists thought 500 years ago. Never, not once. But it's Hermes that kind of gave them that belief system that what happens there could also happen here. And frankly, now we replicate stuff all the time in a lab. Look, my needles are see-through. You think we got that from a tree somewhere? No, that's synthetic wood, if you will. I won't. We make stuff all the time in a lab is what I'm saying. Now, how did they make gold? The whole process of calcination, oxidation, fermentation, the black phase and the white phase, the peacock's tail and merging the red and white dragons and the queens and... Listen, we've all described all that elsewhere. This is not the time or place for tell you how to make gold. Go and have a listen. However, I'll tell you right now, you won't get rich. Unless you have a particle accelerator, then you already are rich. But all these ideas floating around Alexandria came to be their own field, which we now know as alchemy. This field of alchemy went east. Jews translated it to and from Hebrew. Nestorian Christians helped translate it to Arabic. And from there, it went to Persia, where Al-Razi wrote on it, expanded on it. Folks like Al-Ghazali and other famous kind of influencers of alchemy. And then slowly in the Middle Ages, Crusades, and then the fall of Constantinople, the fall of Spain, for sure. Toledo had a great alchemical library. All those events each time that happened, each time one of those events happened, including Crusades, and even, you know, starting in the, let's say, 12th, 13th century, things were translated into Arabic and disseminated across Europe to where, like, popes and emperors, like the Holy Roman emperors, had alchemical labs in their private chambers. Queen Elizabeth had an alchemical lab in her private chambers. So did, yeah, there was in the Vatican several times, several popes had, you know, alchemical experiments running while maybe banning upon the penalty of death the practice of alchemy in their realm. You gotta watch out for inflation, after all. And alchemy existed from 400 AD in Alexandria to about 1700, definitely dead by 1800, but for 1400 years, alchemy was debated. Was it even real? Was it not real? If it was it natural or supernatural? If it was natural, could it be replicated in a lab, or is it just beyond our capabilities of as humans? Is it beyond science? Well, or is it supernatural? Is it then due to the devil or because of God's will? This was debated for, like I said, a millennia and a half. Still is among historians who thought what and what side of arguments people come down on throughout history. A lot of people wrote on alchemy just to call everybody charlatans and frauds and complain about it. Debunk alchemy, if you will. Especially more and more in the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries. By Isaac Newton's time, it was, whew. Isaac Newton had to be super secret and watch out. Isaac Newton wrote more on alchemy than he did on everything else combined. He was an alchemist first and foremost. Your theory of gravity and calculus and all that. No, he was after people that could grow the peacock's tail. As weird as that sounds, that's for sure true. Anyways, this is what we do on the History of Alchemy podcast, which you can find on podcastnik.com or historyofalchemy.com. Podcastnik.com, podcastnik.com is where all of our other shows are. We got a YouTube channel, which is probably where you're watching this. Unless you're listening to the audio version of this, hey, there's a video that you can see me knitting in a suit in front of a green screen and telling the same story. Which that's kind of cool because I have stuff going on behind me. If you're watching this and you're like, yeah, I already figured that out. Thanks, Travis. But we do talk about some 70 alchemists and dozens of concepts relating to alchemy, like the philosophical mercury and the dignities of God and Kabbalah, Neoplatonism. Hermes Trismegistus, Hermeticism, what that is, what does occult sciences mean? Someplace, I don't know exactly where I put it right now, but there's this nice book I wrote that's really simple to read because it's only like 30 pages. I don't know. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to do us a huge favor, go to podcastnikshop.com. That's podcastnikshop.com. Check out our merch. It's pretty sweet. If you're watching the video, you're looking at it right now. Trust me, somehow, in post-edit. If you're on the podcast, please do check out podcastnikshop.com, because if you're an alchemy nerd like me, or you like history of the occult and science and all that, there's a lot there for you. Not just our own merch, but our own private collection of alchemical stuff. Anything we could get our hands on, really. And the shop grows all the time, so if you've been there before, check it out anyways. Sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to stay in touch and figure out let you know what we're doing. We will not spam you. In fact, you might only hear from us like once or twice a year, but that really, even if you do drift and you unsubscribe and we got 10 podcasts out right now. I got 10 podcast feeds, 2 YouTube channels, and a partridge in a pear tree, so... Definitely. I'm not even going to tell you where to follow us on Twitter, like at Podcastnik, at Travis J. Dow, at Alchemy Pod. Go to podcastnik.com and all the rest is kind of there for you. Check out our other videos. Check out our other shows. Check out our merch. Thanks for subscribing. Spread the word. We do have sponsors, and if they gave us any kind of promotion code to pass on, then they're in the description. So check that out. Anyways, turning lead into gold. That's what alchemy is. It's not that hard to understand. Thanks for watching.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.